Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Fuquan Bilal. Hi, Fuquan.
Hey, what's going on, Mike? How are you this morning, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastically well. Thanks for asking. Thanks for having me on the platform. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. I appreciate you coming. And you're the neighbor from New Jersey. I'm in New York. You're in New Jersey. We're close neighbors.
Yes. And the last time we spoke, it was 8 inches of snow on the ground. Now it's a beautiful weather.
That's right. As much as I do like snow and I like cold weather, but all good things must come to an end, and season's three. So I'm happy it's getting a little bit warmer. So let's talk a little bit about you, what you do, and you're a specialist in notes. And could you tell the audience a little bit about you and who you are, what you do?
Absolutely. So first of all, I'm a superhero to my kids. So I want to put that out there. I'm sure you are too. That's the title that I'm claiming today. I actually started, I've always been in sales all my life. I remember from when I was younger, my mom used to take me and my younger brother, who's 3 years younger than me, to something we call a bazaar, or like a flea market, you would call it. And we used to go to Chinatown, and we used to buy the stuff wholesale, what she did, purchase the stuff wholesale, and we would come out and sell at retail. And I quickly learned, you know, how to generate money from when I was younger by doing these things. So one of the tricks, I'll just tell this story. When we were at one of the flea markets, people used to come onto a parking lot that someone used to rent multiple tables on. So I was like, wow, this guy has an empty parking lot. He's selling these booths for $100 for the day, and you get the opportunity to come and sell your products, scarves, whatever it was. So I actually used to walk across the street and sell to people before they came to the lot and kind of generate my money that way. And used to always tease my younger brother. So I've always been in sales and I was excited about it. That transitioned into me becoming very successful as a director of sales for a computer system repair company. And my goal there was to check out the SEC website just to see what companies were doing bad in their performance as far as their profit and loss, and try to get them to outsource their work to us and sell their real estate. And doing that, at the time, I had a cousin that I've always been competitive with. He started his journey in the real estate business a year or so before me. And he used to tease me with his checks when he closed, his $25,000 checks, $20,000 checks. You're talking like back in 99. I was fairly young. I was only like 24 years old, and maybe 23, 24 years old. And I said, hey, let me, that piqued my interest. So I started to shadow him around. And lo and behold, I was able to get one of those $25,000, $30,000 checks within 6 months. And I put my two-week notice in. So that started my real estate journey in 99. And it was a great run. I had the opportunity to go through all those exotic products that was out there that the banks were giving. And you know, the market was increasing very quickly. So I am market cycle tested, Mike. I actually went through the downturn. I got hurt pretty bad. You know, I made a lot of capital. And what I used to do was use the investor capital to buy the properties, and I would use my capital to rehab them. And when the market tanked, I only had enough equity really to cover the investors and make a little bit of something for myself, but really nothing for all the hard work that I did over that 7-8 year run that I had. So I pretty much had to start all over again, but it taught me a lot. It taught me really to understand relationships that I had with these investors, and basically gave me the opportunity to start back again when the market turned around, and I use investors today. Through that process, I went through the fixing and flipping, and then it forced me to be a landlord when the market crashed. And I really didn't like the tenants, toilet trash, and termites too much. And I was trying to look for other things within the real estate world, and I discovered the note business, which is really the most powerful investment strategy in the universe, you know, my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you for the great intro. And the notes is we're going to talk about today. And it's in the self-storage space, they say no tenants and toilets. And you could say in the notes space, there are no tenants and toilets either. You don't have tenants, ideally. You have paper. You own the paper. So
yeah. I mean, it's a great space to be in. What I really liked about it, the same concept that I had when I went back, because I'm from North New Jersey, which is a rough area, but it taught me adversity, and that's how I grew into the man I am today. But it really gave me a feeling of importance when I was able to go back into the community that I come from and rehabilitate these properties and give people better living conditions and everything. So that's pretty much what I was doing, you know, when I was flipping properties. So when I converted over to notes, it gave me the same feeling of importance to help homeowners stay. The type of notes that we purchase are residential, 1-4 families nationwide. So I was like, wow, you know, I can actually buy this asset at a discount, this non-performing note, work something out with the homeowner, give them a better situation than they had with the bank, and essentially become the bank, and then have that cash flow from paper, pretty much laptop cell phones. And that pretty much really gave me the enthusiasm to go all in and just focus this on notes. And I did that for since 2011 when I got involved all the way, you know, to the market started to turn a little bit in 2015. Now today I do diversified hybrid strategy where I'm doing a lot of notes and have some real estate mix in that portfolio also, just to create a buffer, a hedge against whatever's to come. Everybody's saying the meteor is about to fall out of the sky. I'm still waiting for it.
Well, it doesn't look like it's coming today. Hopefully not today. But the certainly talk of the correction in 2019, 2020, at least some level of it's kind of overdue. But we don't know how long this economic expansion will keep running. So let's keep talking about notes. So you deal primarily with non-performing notes. And can you explain to the audience in a couple of quick sentences, what's the difference between performing note, non-performing note, and re-performing note? Can you?
So in short, one word, pricing. That's the difference. Non-performing note is self-explanatory. It's something that's on a bank's books and haven't received a payment 90 days or more. They classify it as non-performing. You know, the Basel laws require the banks to hold 10 times the amount of liquidity for the bad debt that they have. So if they have $1 million in bad debt, they have to hold $10 million in liquidity. Banks want to lend money. They want to arbitrage. That's the space they're in. So they sell those assets off at a discount. To a fund like myself and to you, we get to buy those assets in bulk and get a great discount for non-performing. And the goal there is to take it through the cycle and work it from non-performing to performing, which may consist of short sales, some REOs, some modifications, you know, things of that nature. So you get a big discount on non-performing. On performing, actually, the next phase is re-performing. It's something that basically just turn from non-performing to performing. Maybe it doesn't have that one-year track record yet, but the borrower has been making payments for 6 months or more. We would classify that as re-performing. It's a, you know, a tick up in pricing, but not the full pricing that you would get as a re-performing. And a re-performing is something that's been seasoned for quite some time, and the borrower has shown that they have the ability to pay, and they continue to pay, and has a great performance track record. So those usually sell, depending on where they are, or a non-judicial stage, that stuff you probably buy at par. We talking first mortgages, you're probably talking anywhere between 7 and 9 yield. If you're talking that's first, seconds, you probably get that stuff at a 12 yield. For non-judicial stakes, even down to 10, we're seeing in today's market. So just depending on what side you are on, I like the seconds. I start off in seconds. It gave me the ability to have an option on a property that's worth more money. So a quick example, I can buy a $50,000 second for $12,000. They owe $50,000 on the unpaid principal balance. Maybe there's another $10,000 in arrears that I can try to work something out with the borrower to lower my costs. But it gives me an option on multiple properties versus, you know, everybody's strategy is different. Like yourself, you guys buy high balance loans, you know, the big loans, the $250,000 or more type loans. Whereas most people in my space, they buy $100,000 or less first mortgages on properties. It could be Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida in the back, those type of properties. You know, but it's just a diversified strategy that I like about the note space.
Well, there was a lot of lessons here, a lot of information in a couple of short sentences. So what we heard, just for the audience, is they're first lien loans and second lien loans. And Fuquan, you're specializing a little bit more in the seconds now. You used to do more first. So first lien loans are inherently safer than the second lien loans. And first position, But secondly, notes could be just as lucrative. And the other key point you conveyed is that you can buy these seconds still at a very, very steep discount. It's certainly higher risk product, but you could still buy them. It sounds to me like 25 cents on a dollar. I know before it used to be probably 10 to 15 cents on a dollar, but you're still getting them at a steep discount to then pay principal balance. And now let's talk a little bit about your ability to get paid in these seconds. And let's talk a little bit about real equity versus emotional equity. So what happens when you buy some of these seconds and you're going through the workout life cycle with the borrowers? Some of them are old lines of credit. Some of them are old second lien loans. They haven't paid for years, but they've been paying first lien mortgage. So what happens in these type of situations? You buy these seconds. People think that they forget about that they had the debt in the house. They've been paying first, and the property is appreciated. And now you come in and you buy the second lien loan, and you sell them. You send them a letter, notice of default on a second. So what happens? Walk us through some scenarios. What happens when the invested seconds, what you do as a specialist?
Oh, absolutely. So we like to exit through the borrower. That's really the most profitable strategy. You know, my motto is if I foreclose, I fail. We don't want the property. We want to work something out with the borrower. We want to keep them in the house. So we our strategy is based on that. So we'll do a letter campaign just to let the borrower know that, you know, we're the new lender. The servicer will send out a letter stating who's the servicer. And basically, we'll send them out a welcome package or, you know, some type of documentation they can actually read through to see who we are and how we want to help them. If we don't hear anything from them, then the next phase is legal, where legal really is the thing that brings them to the table to negotiate. Like you said, they took this loan out, this home equity line of credit, where they were supposed to fix up the house and renovate the kitchen. Maybe they bought a boat or a new car or went shopping. You know, then the market tanked and they forgot about it. You know, we kind of use a different approach when we go after these borrowers because we don't want the property. So we let the attorney start the foreclosure process where we tell the attorney, we don't want to go all the way through the end. We just want to get the borrower to the table. So usually once they go through about first phase, when the foreclosure action is actually filed after the demand letter expires in the judicial state, then the borrower starts getting all these letters from these different attorneys representing them, all these wholesalers sending letters to their house, and they know it's kind of real. And they reach out to us. It's usually 70% of the time they will reach out to us, and we're able to either negotiate a short sale if they feel as though the property doesn't have any equity and you know they don't think it's a win-win situation. We'll walk them through all the steps. We'll offer keys for cash. And deed in lieu of foreclosure, we'll try that strategy. And you know, if it doesn't work, we'll relocate them to another property. We've even been in situations where we had a pods container delivered to their house and shipped it to their new address that we've given them rent and security for to move and get the keys for cash. Of course, we will run a title to make sure it's clean before we do that process, but that's one of the strategies that we'll do. And even if it's negative equity and they moved out, there's an arbitrage play there. So we will just assess with the current rents are net in those areas like New York, you know, maybe $4,500 a month for a three-bedroom. And maybe the first mortgage, they modified it down and got a 2% interest. And maybe it's $2,500 or $3,000 a month for the mortgage. And we can rent it out for $4,500 and create an arbitrage there. And, you know, we're not liable to pay the first mortgage. We can if there's an arbitrage, but if there's not, you know, New York has a long foreclosure time, so there's a different strategy that you can do there. Try to do a short sale once the mortgage goes delinquent and snowball to foreclosure. And that's just one option if there's no equity. Of course, if there's equity, more than likely, we will try to get them to refinance once we do the workout so we can cash out that equity. Just depending on what their credit looks like, it's a 620 FICO that's required for FHA loan. So we try to, you know, go into that strategy. And if that doesn't work, then they can always sell the property and cash is out. So there's multiple different strategies. Discounted payoffs. A lot of them have money in their IRA that they don't know they can use for hardship. They have 60, 70, 80,000 sitting there, and we'll take a discounted payoff. You know, more than often, we purchased it at a discount. We're going to share the discount with the borrower. We're not going to try to get all the flour under the baker fingernail, as they say. We're not going to be greedy. We're going to really work something out and add value to them. So most likely, the strategy is for the borrower. That's what I like about seconds. 70% of the time we're able to work something out, whereas first, it's, you know, usually 80% of the time you're taking the property back, you know, in my experience.
Well, that's a great share. It's just a wealth of information. I certainly love your strategy where a couple of things. One is that you're approaching it with the great mission. You're helping folks. You're not trying to take their property. You're trying to get them to work something out. The second thing that I very much like is the fact that you can, if they don't want the house, you could take over the first mortgage payment and create arbitrage. So you could essentially, it's like an option on a house. Well, you're basically buying an asset that is negative on equity, but positive on a cash flow. And that's a very plausible strategy. And then obviously, to kind of a loan mod to get them to reperform or discounted payoff makes a lot of sense because you're buying them so cheap. You have plenty of room to wiggle, to give them. If you're buying them at 25 cents on a dollar, you could take a short payoff at 50 cents on a dollar and still be okay.
Absolutely. I mean, the probability factor plays a big part too in seconds. If I'm looking at the credit report and I see all the other bills are paid and I'm the only guy that's not being paid, and I see that what I want for my monthly payment is in line with the rents versus their first mortgage, they're going to stay. They're not going to uproot and move their kids and go through the whole process, move and pay rent and security if I'm asking for a payment that fits in line with the current market rent versus their first mortgage. So, you know, if it's $400 or $500 I'm asking and they're going to pay that anyway, if they move to a new place with their paying for their first in that, it almost makes sense for them to stay. So that's a big thing in second. Second is more due diligence on the borrower than the property, whereas first is the property.
Right. That's a great point. It's such an interesting and a different ball game to be working seconds. You know, you're so right. It is all about the borrower and their ability to make the payments. And they're generally small loans, and you can work out a plan with them. There's so much flexibility you have if the borrower situation is such that they can pay. So it makes a ton of sense. But one thing I wanted to kind of comment on, and this is where your expertise comes in, this is certainly a game of specialization. You have pretty good return on investment. But what about return on time? What I worry about these small loans that you do or you take, return on time on them is not great because it's a lot of work. You gotta take it through the process. Are you doing a lot of work yourself, or services do a lot of work for you? I'm just curious. What do you think about return on time in these notes, small notes, space period?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I first started with Seconds, I'm not going to lie to you, it was a lot of work. It was a business. And I had 10 employees and I was trying to audit the collateral. And, you know, we were self-servicing. We were doing everything in-house. And then as I started to grow and develop these resources and raise more capital, scalability became an issue for me. You need three things to be successful in this business. You need the capital. You need the source to buy from, and scalability. We did a trade back in 2015 where we purchased 1,005 loans. That was the biggest trade at the time. And I was only buying 50 or 40, 100. And then we had raised capital. We took down a large trade with Banco Popular paper, and it was 1,005 loans. And it took me literally almost a year and a half to adjust to that trade, you know, the post trade. It was putting systems in place, developing and everything else. So scalability really was a major, major issue until I learned how to leverage the vendors. And, you know, I was able to cut costs by outsourcing all of the work to the loan servicers, to the document custodians to audit the file. Now the file gets shipped straight to the document custodian. They do the audit. They give us an exception report. It gets boarded automatically with the servicer. So we get all digital images, everything. You don't get hard copy files to our office anymore. And it's just a great thing. And leveraging also the attorneys through asset managers. So we do have in-house asset managers, and these are people who actually used to be down in the everyday working the loans and going through that process. Now I've leveraged the vendors by utilizing them who's skillful and know what the end game is, and they can communicate that direction to the servicer, to the foreclosure attorney, to the private investigator. All of those parties, they can communicate with them and then bring back the data to me to review. And I buy weekly meetings on where we are in the process of the life cycle of these loans. So typically right now, you know, instead of 10 people, I have a team of six And, you know, most of them are asset managers, portfolio managers, and administrative people who help do due diligence on these trades. So, and we just leverage the vendors. That's what I would say. Learn how to put that power team together, which consists of the loan servicer, asset manager, foreclosure attorney, private investigator. You know, you can be successful and have that, have more time to sell.
Yeah, this is great. So the one thing we talked about earlier, and I wanted to bring this up again, you have a very inexpensive way to foreclose. You have all the connections to all these attorneys who do this in large volume. And remind me, what's the what does it cost on average to actually run through a foreclosure if you can't work it out faster?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, our COGS are between $3,000 and $5,000. Just depends the services from NPL to RPL, non-performing to reperforming. Just depends on what state you're in. Non-judicial states are less expensive and faster, like Texas, California. We may spend $2,000 on legal action. Because it's so fast, the borrower is going to work something out quickly, because in 60 days you can have the property in a non-judicial state. In a state like New York, New Jersey, where it's a court process, it takes longer. So another thing I learned also to keep that cost down is to stay away from attorneys who bill you hourly. And that was tough, especially you're on the phone with an attorney, you send an email, and you get a bill for literally nothing. Like, you know, so we develop these relationships with attorneys where we're just getting charged for work that's performed. We're not getting charged for phone calls. We're not getting charged for back and forth. Now, if the bar contests the situation, that's completely different, because now they have to spend more time on a file and we just bill hourly for that. But just not for the chit chat back and forth and regular stuff. We have specific pricing because we do volume and they want to continue to get business from us. And another strategy we use to cut costs is suing on the note instead of foreclosure. So suing on the note is another strategy that, if you guys know, you can use, because there's two instruments that the borrower sign when they take the loan. They sign a mortgage, which is the collateral to the property, and the note, which is the promissory. So the mortgage follows the note. So if you have the note, the allonges and everything down to you, you can actually file a lawsuit and get a judgment in the judicial state faster and cheaper. And you can garnish their wages and you can put judgments on all the assets. Of course, you have to do due diligence first to see, you know, if you can collect, if they have multiple properties and assets, and that would be a great strategy to get a faster negotiation process with the borrower.
Fuquan, that makes a lot of sense. The well, in non-judicial states, you have to sue them anyway, but you're saying you would start a non-mortgage foreclosure lawsuit. You'd basically just sue under the note?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And it's fast. It's about 4 months. We get in court and they have to settle. We would do that. We see they have multiple properties. So we have a credit report. You can see 2-3 mortgages on this borrower. You do the due diligence. Oh, they own a couple of them.
You get a judgment on the note and you can slap it on everything they own. And then,
absolutely.
And then take
absolutely
it from there. Yeah, yeah, makes sense. That's another brilliant strategy. I appreciate. And from time to time, we will talk offline. If we ever need to access to your attorneys, it would be helpful. Because I certainly don't want to. We interact with some attorneys and the hourly billing is just painful. And
that'd kill you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why the if you go the traditional route on a bigger loan, you expect to spend $20,000-$30,000. And if you go your route, even in judicial state, it's probably going to be a third of that, even with
easy
in a difficult state. So we are almost out of time. I greatly appreciate your thoughts and feedback. I'd like to bring you back again. This has been very insightful, just wealth of information in the non-performing note space. The seconds, you're certainly a specialist, and we got to talk some more offline. How do we do some business together? And I'm certainly impressed with your knowledge and experience working non-performing notes and seconds and firsts and so on. So, any parting thoughts? If folks wanted to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach out?
Oh, absolutely. So you can reach me at nngcapitalfund.com is the site. You can go there and send me a message through the site, or you can send me an email directly at fbilal@nngcapitalfund.com. Appreciate you having me on the platform, and talk to you soon, Mike.
Thank you, Fuquan. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.